The film We Don't Live Here Anymore is a new family drama about marriage based on the work of the late André Debus. The ensemble cast includes Laura Dern, Mark Ruffalo, Naomi Watts, and Peter Krause. Film critic David Edelstein has a review.
Tolstoy wrote that each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. And I would add that when it comes to marriage, especially with children, each unhappy couple reinvents the wheel, the torture wheel. Each of us, after all, has a different threshold for four-letter words and infidelities and all the other forms of emotional battery that you'll find in We Don't Live Here Anymore, which is like a bad marriage greatest hits collection. The movie is based on two related novellas by the late André Debus, and it's not a film to see if you're contemplating tying the knot. In fact, it's a workout if you're already entwined. The movie is a chamber drama for four. There's practically no one else in the thing but two couples and their children. The men are Jack, played by Mark Ruffalo, and Hank, played by Peter Krause. They're college English department academics with beards, but they're also pretty fit, and their regular running dates turn into macho competitions. On a related front, they're playing out a more perverse game that involves seducing each other's wives. Jack's wife, Terry, is played by Laura Dern, and Naomi Watts is Edith, who's married to Krause's Hank. When we meet these four, they're drunk in Jack and Terry's kitchen. Jack and Edith, that's Ruffalo and Watts if you're keeping score, go off to buy beer. They smooch, declare their desire, and make a date for the next day. Krause's Hank doesn't miss this. His own affairs are legion, and he has designs on the miserably unhappy Terry. Miserably isn't a word I use lightly. Laura Dern turns Terry into one of the more full-throttled, neglected spouses in the annals of film. She's so haggard it's alarming, and her mouth, which has always been mobile, is now halfway to claymation. It's constantly collapsing and reforming. It's no wonder Ruffalo's Jack squirms when she's in his face.
We've been married so long that you're bored? Is that it?
Terry.
No, is that what it is? Because you can leave any time.
Terry.
I mean, maybe you and I should sit down and talk about how long
Terry.
This thing is going to last between you and me.
I am not going
fine,
anywhere.
Jack.
I have
the
never
kids will
wanted
be fine,
to go anywhere.
You know, if you're
I am
suffering,
not suffering.
If this is such
I am
a
not,
disappointment.
What are you really worried about, Terry?
Other husbands touch their wives.
Do you see Hank fondling Edith every second?
Hank doesn't love her. He told me when you were out.
He said that to you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Why did he tell you that?
I don't know. He just said it.
What were you guys doing? You just blurted that out? It seems odd.
We were talking. How else do people tell each other things?
Well, usually when people say things like that, they're doing other things.
You have to understand, We Don't Live Here Anymore doesn't build to that scene. The movie starts at that level and keeps climbing. Even the lame excuses of the furtive lovers as they head out the door to take the car in or do some work in the library hit you like blows, especially when the needy kids are being lied to, along with the spouses. The film is presented more or less from the perspective of Ruffalo's Jack, but it doesn't take his side, or anyone else's side. They're all in their way suffering. The director, John Curran, made an Australian film called Praise, which was like Sid and Nancy if you took away the violence and satire and rock and roll and left only the grasping. This movie ups that grasping quotient. It's rooted less in a film tradition than in the suburban spouse-swapping novels of the early 70s, only not so glib. The 70s is when Debus wrote these stories and when the screenwriter Larry Gross adapted them, and the movie is dated by the fact that these women don't have careers or hobbies. But the ebb and flow and overflow of the character's emotions exert a strong pull on our own. Jack is a sensitive guy, but his passivity towards his wife is a form of cruelty. He pretends to be asleep while in his car out front his best friend seduces Terry, and then he takes sadistic pleasure in letting her know he saw everything. You look at Jack and think, what's eating him? Is he just not ready to grow up and accept responsibility for his family? He certainly has a scary role model in Krause's Hank, who has that monumental sense of self-entitlement you see in artists who decide their work gives them license to indulge their every fleeting desire. Some critics have accused the movie of being too florid, too undiluted, too much. But I think in that muchness, it approaches the psychological condition of marriage. Often the camera is so close that the character's pain twists you up. Then you're distanced by floating long shots. The score, by Michael Covertino, is full of spooky, disharmonic shimmers, like astral winds. It's perfect music for people too much on top of each other, yet lost in space.
David Edelstein is film critic for the online magazine Slate.